Igneous by Sikivu Hutchinson. Narrated by Elvinette Piard. Under the clunk buzz of 1 a.m. TV, they talked, unpacking the day in sluggish cul-de-sac sentences. The mother cursing about work shitheads. The father chewing on the price of gas, the ever-exploding light bill. The neighbors baying hellhounds, raunchily out for blood. Ever since elementary school, the clunk buzz and chatter had been fluttering in and out of consciousness, soundtrack and sedative. The two of them sparring, watching, sparring, snoring. Until one night, a sound, just under a Big Mac jingle, soft and slithery from the father's mouth.
Book,
he said, the slither turning into a squawk. An insurance ad had come on, selling bundles for autos, homes, boats, howitzer cannons. She was not sure what she'd heard him say until the mother repeated it, snickering the knowing snicker of rebuke. There was a moment of silence, punctuated by the refrigerator's hum, the toilet's burble, a robot nightbird trilling all the niggling, fugitive sounds that conspired against her when she went to bed, tossing, turning, counting sheep on the knife's edge of wakefulness. In the morning, at breakfast, she stared down into her soggy bowl of cornflakes, dividing them into regiments. Kryptonite versus gypsum, stalagmite versus stalactite, rat versus bat, mother versus father, knight versus mare, igneous versus metamorphic. Airplanes roared overhead, dipping in and out of view. The parents sat across from her in their work clothes, listening. Air traffic control had moved the flight path farther to the east. The sounds got closer and closer every week. Kirill was certain that the planes would be on top of them soon, shearing off the roof, the pilot and crew peering inside, doing reconnaissance on the ant farm of their apartment. The parents chattered on about scheduling, workflows, the boil on the butt irritant of discount gulping customers in endless queues at the Swifty Mart, where they'd finally made junior manager and head courtesy shuttle driver after being rank and file for a decade, scoring a 75-cent bump up from minimum wage, doing overlapping shifts that spat them out onto the streets at 10:45 p.m. sharp. At the table, the gibberish of the night before was gone, but she knew what she'd heard. Every time she tried to ask about it, they talked over and through her, scolding her table manners and incomplete math homework, contrasting her nappy hair to the ivory tower rope of Rapunzel's curls sported by the girls on the first floor, edging her out the door to the school bus with a pat on the head and a half week's lunch money. Deciphering the gibberish became a morsel for her to suck on for the rest of the day. Thought about it cowering in the school cafeteria amidst jeering food fight ferrets from eighth grade. Thought about it dodging creamed corn cups and chicken fried steak. Thought about it and the problem of Veronica, the Ace Boone wannabe light of her life. Veronica had been shipped out to another school, sentenced to watch paint peel in Sunday service for the lip lock she'd given Kirill behind the bungalows. A flush with her first A in algebra. They'd been spotted and tagged. "Y'all nasty," the top point guard on the girls' varsity basketball team said, a heat-seeking missile aiming an imaginary jump shot at them, snitching to the locker room during P.E. at sixth period, leading a look at those freak lesbos chant to the tune of Three Blind Mice. After Veronica had been banished, there was no one else she could tell about the parents' squawk language, other than her rocks. She kept a collection under her bed, a kingdom that had started when her mother gave her a pair at seven, a gleaming, speckled, bashful duo, from the Earth's spinning core. The only gift she'd ever been given, because the parents said birthdays and Christmas were for groping, grasping sinners. Night after night, the rocks nested there. Confidants, innocent of the creeping terror of middle school. Ever so lucky, ever so loyal. Pledged never to squeal, betray, snitch through loose lips curdled with picayune drama. She kept one in her pocket on school days, taking refuge in its stillness, the world tumbling around her as she waited for the bus, whispering commands into it when no one was looking.
Take me away from here. Tell me where you've been. Keep my voice for eternity. Make me inanimate. No blood, no feelings, no soft, dirty, crumbling bits.
Willing her eyes into burning black holes that could blast the ferrets to subatomic particles. But nothing moved. Nothing changed. Nothing flamed. The eighth graders still gnashed their chompers about popping Gila monster pimples, copping feels in the bathroom, pulverizing asteroids in the greasy spoon video game across from the school. Fantasy spitballing white teachers in a nuclear flood to the dean's office. After work, the parents fell into bed with the TV turned up, the wood paneling that separated their rooms vibrating with their gibberish amidst police chases, murders, carjackings, kidnappings, fires, crashes, pet adoption pandemonium from the morning news dribbling down to a pinpoint of white noise as she wriggled in the seamy grip of REM. One night, she got out an old tape recorder, hovering by the wall, waiting for the squawks to begin. If the floorboards creaked, if they heard her, if they found out she was recording them, would she vanish in the middle of the night like snot-nosed Willard Jones in apartment 3B? Zapped between sour milk and bedtime cookies and the rainbow test pattern beckoning like a shit god from the banged-up zenith that only got three good channels when the weather was clear, calm, stuporous. Snot-nosed Jones had never been heard from again. The space where his body lay replaced by a stuffed animal, a snug-as-a-vug-in-a-rug, glassy-eyed tigger grinning from underneath the covers of his trundle bed. She kneeled against the wall, pressing the red button, pushing the vision of Willard out of her thoughts. The squawks faded. The tape recorder whirr getting louder in the bogwater silence of the two rooms, shivering against each other like conjoined twins. One of the parents shuffled out of bed to turn off the TV. Would someone go out into the hall to use the bathroom? Launch into an insomniac roam? Make the dreary trek from the bedroom to kitchen and back again to kill time? Stare into the bottomless maw of the still dark street and contemplate bailing for good, setting sail down, down, down to the underground, to the stratigraphy of everything that went before, plumb their secrets. She strained against the wall and heard nothing but the apnea wheeze of the parents settling back into their bombed-out mattress. 5 hours blissfully dead to the world before they staggered into work. She crawled back under the covers and lay still. The smirk of 3B Tigger rose up in front of her. She had only seen Snot-Nosed a few times. Heard his cloying voice smashing Hot Wheels, demanding candy, whimpering about the hotness of the nightly bathwater. A paper doll cutout of random sounds until he went silent. A message stuffed into a bottle, thrown into the sea. Did Tigger have the same memory as the boy? She wondered this on the way to school, the tape secure in her backpack, the rock jiggling in her pocket. She would muster up the courage to play the tape for her life sciences teacher, who knew foreign languages, or at least claimed to. The teacher roamed the quad, chomping tuna fish during nutrition, declaiming on the glory of nematodes to the campus aides zipping by on their go-karts. The aides were hot shit on patrol, browbeating the known universe of surly, slurping gorgers scheming their next blitz on space invaders right after the bell rang and the cliques disbanded, skittering off to the last class of the day. Tuna fish teacher would be slumped over the double sink at the back of the room grading papers, country and western blaring from a transistor radio. After school, Kirill waited for the other kids to leave, then approached with the tape, tongue-tied, as Tuna stamped Fs onto a pile of pop quizzes in rapid fire. "This thing is in bad shape," Tuna grunted, pressing down the play button on the chunky classroom tape recorder. "They're delicate animals, these things. Tapes, that is. Once had a job splicing them for a record producer. 8 hours a day in a basement with no lunch. Had to identify any offending material and snip it, sew it up, and make it sound like it had never been there." She trailed off, squinting at the tinny sound coming through the speaker. "Can barely hear anything. Are you sure this is what you wanted me to listen to?" Kirill nodded. She had never had a full-blown conversation with Tuna, avoiding eye contact when her name was called, or homework was returned, or lab partners were assigned in plotting alphabetical order. "I recorded it through the wall," she muttered, kneading her creamed corn-stained t-shirt into a knot. At 2 minutes in, the squawk sounded, crisp as forest leaves crunching underfoot. Tuna sat up straight on the stool. "They're plotting something," she said. "How do you know?" "By the cadence of their voices." "Cadence?" "Tempo, pace." "How can you tell they're plotting by that?" "Deduction. Why else would they be talking nonsense in the middle of the night? How long has this been going on? Why didn't you confront them on it?"
"Dunno. Maybe in a week."
"Where do your parents work?"
"At the Swifty Mart. Managing stuff. Driving the shuttles."
"Place is a ripoff. Fruits packed with pesticides, and they got us Negroes doing all the peon jobs. Wouldn't shop there if my life depended on it." She jammed the speaker up to her ear. "You live near the airport? Sounds like planes in the background." In her dreams that night, she was falling upward, sucked into the tentacles of orange sky shooting lava. The brains who sat in the front of Tuna's class and aced every exam watched from the ground, twirling in a dust storm, chanting in a mishmash of English and the parents' squawk speak. She woke up to the sound of doors shutting, piss in her pants, the alarm clock frozen at 5:16. If she was late for school, the brains would be converging on her empty seat on the bus. Once, one had squeezed her butt like a toy horn. The bus driver barely cut her eyes in the rear mirror before shifting back to traffic, ticker tape going through her head like, "They crammed their junk into Jordaches two sizes too small. What did they expect? They shake their stripper pole asses down the aisles. What do they expect? Lie down with dogs and you get up with fleas. What do they expect?" She overheard the women drivers saying, comparing their hellion cargo on a smoke break. Lying under the busted alarm clock, pieces of ceiling plaster sprinkled down on her hair from the upstairs neighbor's marathon god-hollering. She could barely move her legs, arms swimming in robot claws at her sides. She willed the claws to shrink, then sat up, going to the bathroom to wash off. The parents' voices bounced through her head, ripping her for being tardy, smelly, messy. Everything that a tigger could never be, wise behind its cold, hard, downward spiral eyes. The tape recorder loomed in silhouette on her desk, It had been pried open, tape spooled onto the floor in brown garlands, a heap big enough to hide a small body. She unraveled it, bracing herself, half expecting to find the boy from 3B there, cowering at the sight of her robot claws. Had the parents listened to the tape while she was sleeping? Swapped it, sabotaged it, afraid of exposure? The phone rang. A secretary buzzed in pastel tones on the other end. The parents had not come into work. A sub had to take over her father's courtesy shuttle route. Did she know where they were? Was there another adult in the house she could speak to? Kirill shook her head, forgetting for a moment that the secretary couldn't see her. She gripped the black receiver, fumbling for her voice, croaking no as the building vibrated with the mass exodus of bodies launching to work, school, the laundromat. Tell them to give HQ a call if they surface, sweetie, the secretary said, ringing off in a cloud of white lady pity. Kirill counted to 10, then went to the parents' room. The bedspread gleamed in beige, pressed perfection, nary a wrinkle, muss, imprint, or betrayal of their presence. The dresser swam with costume jewelry, gnarled receipts, multicolored pills, cigarette packs, juicy fruit wrappers, photo negatives. She picked one up and held it to the light, flinching at the sight of herself, face turned inside out, frame by frame, a doppelganger sitting at the window of the school bus, hunched alone on the quad with her lunch on her lap, plodding home, the brains trailing her in the background, heads down, immersed in the brain babble. At school later that morning, she sat in Tuna's class and waited to show her the negatives. Tuna passed out the weekly quizzes in military order, highest grade to the lowest, watching the brains marinate in smugness with each fail. "Remember, the meek and the humble shall inherit the earth," she said, after the last paper had been snapped up and Kirill crumbled her bloody C-minus under the desk before the boy behind her could talk shit and boost his brownie points with brains. He burped instead, cutting a mushroom cloud path of destruction through the jeering class. The door opened and a school resource officer walked in. She scanned the rows. Tuna jolted to attention, disdain flickering in her sandpaper eyes, the inner sanctum of the room breached. Kirill's name was being called over the loudspeaker. Burp Boy giggled, chanting, "Kirill rhymes with virile!" He licked his lips with pride as the officer thumped him on the shoulder to be quiet and motioned for Kirill to follow her. "Come on," she said. "Why?" she asked. The officer grunted, whisking her down the rain-dappled hallway festooned with Doritos bags blasted into concrete. She squeezed the tape in her pocket, ignoring the titillated your ass's grass gawks from the open classroom doors. The officer turned and took her elbow, guiding her through a side gate to the parking lot and a waiting squad car. "What did I do?" "Get in," the woman said, opening the back door. The vice principal had emerged from his cubbyhole in the main office to oversee her eviction from campus, awash in geysers of sweat, walkie-talkie pressed to his pale, dripping ear. A fleet of Swifty-Mart courtesy shuttles rumbled past with blacked-out windows. She turned, craning to see if her father was driving one. The officer guided her into the back seat and slammed the door, lurching behind the wheel. They peeled off after the shuttles. The police radio blared reports about toilet bombs, truants jumping fences. A few units were being dispatched to the airport for an aerial show. "Did you talk to your parents this morning?" she asked. "They were gone when I woke up." She squinted at Kirill in the rear mirror. "Where's the tape? What did they do?" "Give me the tape and the rock." "I don't have a tape or a rock." "Liar!" Kirill moved her hand over her pocket. The rock jutted from the seams. If the woman rushed her, she would be ready.
I'm not!
The windshield wipers thudded back and forth as the officer watched her in the mirror. I need them for safekeeping.
Not a liar.
There's this story they tell about a wooden boy named Pinocchio. Nose grew long every time he lied.
What did they do?
You mean, what did you do? Quit playing dumb. You dumped them and shared the tape with an outsider.
We can't.
We won't allow it. The officer's eyes narrowed to slits. A car hydroplaned up ahead. The first Swifty Mart shuttle swerved to avoid it, veering onto the shoulder. Its front door flew open. As they passed, Kirill could see the heads of stuffed tigers poking up from the high-backed seats.
My father drives one of those, she said.
Fuck up, the officer said.
What?
He's a fuck up. Both of them. The father driving like a fucking maniac, the mother letting herself get sucked into management.
Got too complacent.
And you letting that asswipe hear the tape and try to decipher it?
Turn around. I want to go back and see if it's him.
Do you really? Kirill hesitated. The slits darkened, whirring with the clunk buzz of a distant universe. She closed her eyes, wanting to unsee the stuffed animals, to unhear the officers' rants and their oddly familiar cadence, the message humming beneath her words. Not quite English, not quite gibberish, but the same color and shape as the parents' tape-recorded voices. The officer looked up at the sky. Planes moved between the rain clouds.
Give me the rock, you coward, she sneered,
switching stations, turning the volume down. Static crackled out, a flatlining hiss like the undertow of waves cracking apart a boat from stem to stern. Then, gently, the unintelligible squawk she'd heard from behind the parents' wall lilted from the speaker.
Bloody Christ, we're late!
The officer put on the siren, maneuvering around the stopped cars. Rubberneckers fidgeted at the stoplight, flowing out from the liquor store and the laundromat under crooked umbrellas, snapping Polaroids in super slow-mo. The tiggers gaped mockingly at them from the back window.
I can only drive so fast, the officer said into the radio. Airport's 5 minutes away.
Kirill sat up in her seat.
Airport? What? Why are we going there?
She had only been to the airport once, a day trip to watch the planes take off and land. Drinking vending machine orange soda and eating potato chips, stealing a Continental Airlines pin from the lunch pail of a little white boy. The parents had left her at the window and gone to browse in the gift store. The planes had launched into the void, breaking black sky, pinpoints disappearing, crushing time. She squinted until they'd vanished completely, wondering if their vanishing was the color of where she'd been before birth. She followed them until her eyes hurt, playing a control game, believing that the second she stopped concentrating, she could make one fall out of the air. Baby bottles, suitcases, overhead bins raining down on the terminal. Then her mother came back with souvenir pet rocks from the gift shop. A gag instruction booklet taped to the front of the package, murmuring,
Take me away from here. Tell me where you've been. Keep my voice for eternity. Make me inanimate. No blood, no feelings, no soft, dirty, crumbling bits. What was that now?
Squawks bleated from the police radio, speeding them through the terminal. Slowly they became an alphabet, crowding out the English words that had ruled her every waking moment. The other language flooded back to her, the dark curl of water from the womb lapping at her feet, rising to her knees, coming to the rescue. The officer looked up at the sky, then at her watch.
The fighter jets have 10 minutes before the humans attack.
They're waiting for your command, Captain. Snap the fuck out of it. If you're not going to do your job, I will. She stopped the car in the middle of the street, lunging at Kirill as a voice like her mother squawked, snickering the knowing snicker of rebuke that she'd heard that first morning under the TV. Kirill touched her shoulder blades, certain that there were feathers sprouting, willing them to not fail her, as she kicked the door open, ran into the crowd, and put the rock to her mouth, uttering a command to the planes overhead, listening for her signal.
Boop!
She squawked. The planes dove down, igneous rocks raining from the cargo holds and onto the seething ant farms of travelers below.
Boop!
She repeated, adjusting her mouth to form the English syllables under her breath.
Destroy! Destroy! Destroy!
Igneous is part of the Sleep Dystopias podcast series. Story and music by Sikivu Hutchinson. Narrated by Elvinette Piard. Pleasant dreams,